IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi, I'm Sarthak, and I welcome you to All Things Policy. In this episode, I have with me my colleague Suman, who manages Takshila's Advanced Public Policy Program. Hi, Suman.
Hi, Sarthak. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So, in this episode, we'll discuss the higher education sector. And basically, we're going to focus on understanding the government interventions in this sector and how has it played out. And yeah, obviously, the market has a role to play in the higher education sector. It plays a significant role in the higher education sector. But how the dynamics between the markets and the government has played out. This episode is based on some of the articles by Professor Devesh Kapoor, Pratap Bhanu Mehta, and Naushad Forbes. So we'll be sharing the readings along with this episode. So this is what we are going to discuss. So before we start, so Suman, I just had one question. What should be the role of government in education and specifically in higher education?
Yeah, for any, the way I look at it, when we look at the role for a government in any sector, the first question that as students of economic reasoning we ask is, what is the market failure or what is the kind of good that we are talking about? So for education as a whole, we have all kinds of economic reasoning. We have come to a conclusion that education provides huge positive externalities and therefore the government has a role to play. This is specifically true for primary education, early education, etc. But the field of education is a little more complex and the higher education sector presents different kinds of challenges. A lot of study has been done as the social rate of return for higher education. While some studies tell us that there is a high social rate of return for higher education and therefore the government should be involved, there are also other studies that are challenging this belief for some time now. Therefore, it becomes important to understand what is the nature of a market and why the government should be here. So I think we begin from those first principles of market failures, the kind of good, etc. It will help us understand what we are trying to solve and will also give us a more broad overview of the challenges of the sector itself. That's, I think, where we can.
Yeah, thanks, Suman. And also, any government will have some limitations with regard to the resources, right? So if they have to look at the entire education sector, and if they have to decide where they have to put their money in school education or in higher education, the amount of money they're spending in, let's say, school education X amount is also equal to some amount of money less that is being spent on higher education. And then again, vice versa, right? If you're putting in money in higher education, maybe that much amount of money less will be there for the primary education. So again, governments have to take that into consideration as well, the opportunity cost.
Yeah, and with respect to that, especially in the Indian context, I think there is a lot of controversy or a lot of discussion that goes on about how India prioritized higher education sector when compared to the primary education sector. But the data doesn't seem to bear that out completely, because when you look at higher education as a percentage of total education, higher education expenditure or as a percentage of total education is just about 15-18%. Which is just about 0.6% of GDP. Okay, these numbers might be slightly dated in terms of a few years ago. Yeah, so if higher education is getting only about 15-18% of total education spend, I don't think that claim that we prioritize this over that is too valid. So we should look at, overall what is the expenditure and how we are spending, allocative decisions that we have to make for higher education, right? So having said what the percentage of expenditure on higher education is, I think it's good to take a step back and ask us about status, ask ourselves about the status of higher education in India. Where do we stand in terms of various parameters, etc.? Sarthak, what is your take on that?
Yeah, so if you look at the higher education sector, the gross enrollment rates, right, in higher education, the gross enrollment ratio, it is quite low, though it has been increasing over a period of time. Now, how do we measure this? Those who are in the age category 18 to 23 years, right, how many of them are getting enrolled in higher education? So if you look at this number, it is around 27%, right? So if there are 100 people who are in the age category 18 to 23 years, just 27 of them are getting enrolled in higher education. The comparable numbers in some of these advanced economies, right? US is way high, like 80% in that range. So, and again, if you compare it with China also, it is quite low. So our GER is low. And not only that, if you look at the quality of learning that happens in some of these institutions, again, it's not up to the mark. Yeah, we do have some educational institutions, which are the premier institutions in India, the IITs, the IIMs, the IISc. But if you look at the international rankings, right, not all of them are also in the top. One of top 200, top 500. Very few of these institutions will be in the top 200, 500. And also, if you look at the overall higher education sector, right, the quality is not good. There are multiple issues. And any student, right, if they want to pursue a specific course, they might not have those options. And some of these premier institutions, look at the number of people who are vying for those seats in these premier institutions. At all these competitive exams that you have, lakhs of people are sitting for just few thousand seats. And some of the other universities, they take students, they admit students on the basis of board exams. The cutoffs have been increasing every year, right? So this is how the system looks like, right? It seems to be a massive demand, but supply has not been able to catch up with that demand. The quality of learning is also not up to the mark.
But when we say supply has not been able to catch up with the demand, there is always this other counter argument that comes, that there is an oversupply of, say, engineering colleges in the south at least. And, you know, also the demand for education in terms of non-professional education, it seems to be much higher than the professional education. That could be because of costs, entry barriers, or anything like that, or things like that. But yeah, when we say demand supply of particular courses, or what do you think are the constraints or the problems that are plaguing these particular sectors?
Yeah. So again, Suman, if you look at this entire higher education sector, you have the markets, right? The private players, they are also providing for higher education. And then you also have different government-run institutions. Yeah, I do agree with you that in some areas, now the seats have actually increased the demand as compared to the demand, but it is not always the case. And in fact, for wherever you are getting quality education, there is massive amount of rush for those people are vying for those few seats. But again, there are many other streams where again, you will find massive scarcity. Look at MBBS, for example, if you want to do medicine. There's so many people who want to pursue medicine, but the number of seats are way limited. So ideally, markets, I mean, how do they work, right? There is a demand for something. And if there is a demand for something, there is a signal to the producers. If there is a scarcity, producers produce more. You should ideally have more number of seats. And as a result of which, yeah, I mean, both the students stand to benefit. At the same time, the higher education institutions, medical institutions would have also benefited. But in higher education sector, this has not happened. The demand and supply is a massive mismatch. Now, one of the reasons is, see, there might be demand, but can producers automatically, immediately set up these institutions? No, they have to go through a set of approvals. So you have different regulatory institutions which provide these approvals. Now, the problem here is there are massive restrictions on that. It is not that easy to meet all these entry barriers, whatever are there, to overcome these entry barriers. So as a result of which, even though there is massive demand in some of these sectors, for example, medicine, you won't have equal or proportionate supply of the, supply is not able to meet those demands. Now, another thing has happened is,
would you actually say that private investment decisions, I mean, we are saying supply is not able to match, it's just somebody making an investment, right? So if private investment decisions are driven more by regulatory requirements rather than market needs?
Yeah, exactly. So regulation here is kind of acting as a constraint, right? It's acting as a bottleneck in between. And in fact, another way also it plays out, not just the harsh regulations in itself, but the different kind of regulations are such that someone who is, let's say, very good in pedagogy or someone who has some sort of innovative solutions for the education sector versus someone who knows how to game the system, right? The person who knows how to game the system, the person who knows how to manipulate the system might be at an advantage as compared to someone who is maybe just interested in the education sector, who's an educationist, so as to say, right? So, and this also leads to a situation where there is adverse selection. The entire sector now attracts more people who know how to game the system, manipulate the system. Right? And as a result of which, what will happen?
When we game this, they meet the regulatory requirement. They have figured out a way to meet regulatory requirements which do not completely follow market rules, maybe, like, you know, competition or any of those. Accreditation
exactly.
Or any of those. Right?
Or they might be engaged in things like rent seeking and other things, which are typical cases of government failure. Yeah. Also, a kind of criteria that are there for regulatory approvals, right? Most of them will be on the basis of inputs, right? For example, how much land you have, right? That is one of the criteria. And not all new entrants, right, might be able to meet these requirements. Maybe they are good at outcomes or outputs, right? But that's not really the focus of our regulatory systems, right? So in this, it also impacts the supply of higher education. It also impacts the quality of higher education because you have just focused on inputs and you have not focused on some players who could have possibly given you better outputs with the usage of minimum amount of inputs.
So it comes down to the point that, you know, these regulations probably came about because of certain fraud, something to protect people from, you know, because there were a few instances of fraud or any of those things. But it has now morphed into something that is becoming a serious limitation for the sector itself, right? So, I mean, we need regulation, we need light touch regulation to protect the interests of students, parents, whatever, you know. But these light touch regulations, they probably could also be taken care of under the Consumer Protection Act or any other. We did not need to get into the regulatory maze and creating, you know, more bottlenecks for people who are starting education institutions. Is that a good way of...
And so not only... Yeah, this is one of the correct ways to put it. But here again, we can divide into two parts, right? One is when you are starting the institution. At that point of time, you are looking at some requirements. But it is not just when you start the institutions or when you want to enter into the sector. You also have periodic mechanisms, right? Day-to-day mechanisms or like monthly or yearly, some sort of accountability mechanism will be there, right? So, for example, audits, inspections, accreditations, these are also there. So, the government does all these things. There are different institutions within the government which does that. Ideally, they should have been able to address some of the problems, but here also you have limitations. For example, you might have inspections, but you also need to have that capacity to carry out these inspections, right? You should have enough people, manpower to do that. They should also be trained for that.
Again,
this also might be lacking. And again,
inspection is again fancy thing, and you know, you're creating, you know, incentives are not actually aligned in that entire inspection system as such.
Principal agent problem can be there. Rent seeking is something which can happen. Accreditation is another way by which some form of accountability can be enforced. But here also you need to have that kind of capacity, right? So these are the typical accountability mechanisms used. But another way by which accountability can be ensured is where the consumers decide, right? That they are the ones who will decide, right? If you have enough supply of seats, and in that case, the demand, right? The way the supply and demand will match, it can ensure accountability. But the problem here is we have had more demand, but we did not have enough number of seats, enough educational institutions. So in that case, what will happen? There is not much incentive for the existing players to improve their pedagogy, to improve their learning outcomes. They do not have, they can be just held unaccountable in that case.
Yeah. Also, when you talk about accountability, the other way to think about accountability is to reduce information asymmetry. If you insisted on colleges to put out information regarding your students, regarding, you know, number of the results,
student profiles,
the outcomes they got out of through the year. This takes care of at least some part of the information asymmetry, and it creates kind of a level playing field as such for people, for players within the market, right? So, light touch regulation as a big means is as a way to monitor is not working all that well in this sector. So we need to find other ways of monitoring better. Right? At this point, I think we should take a break.
Rather than monitoring, there can be other ways also. Yeah, but yes, let's have a quick break. When you are back from the break, we'll see what has been the government's role in higher education. Hi everyone, welcome from the break. So before the break, we were discussing about what are some of the different kinds of regulations in higher education and as a result of which, what have been the outcomes, right? So because of these regulations, supply of different kinds of higher education institutions, seats have been limited and the quality has also been impacted. But it is not just that the markets have been providing for higher education. The government also, in case of India, both the union governments and the state governments, they are also involved in a much deeper way in the higher education sector. For example, they run different higher education institutions on their own. And even if they're not running these higher education institutions, many times what they will do is they will fund higher education, they will subsidize private sector higher education as well. But here also, there are different kinds of limitations, or maybe here also the effectiveness could have been better. Now, there are some issues here. For example, if you look at the state funding of higher education, large part of it is revenue expenditure. Right? Almost 95% of it is revenue expenditure, which implies that the capital expenditure is very low, which implies that there is not much investment happening to improve infrastructure maybe. Also, some of the higher education institutions which are run by the government, they are considered to be the premier institutions. People fight for those limited seats that are there. But the credibility of these higher education institutions, the IITs, the IIMs, they are more dependent on the fact that they are very, very selective when it comes to admitting students. It lacks of people vying for those few hundred seats or a thousand seats, which also indirectly implies that their pedagogy might not be as good, or at least they do not have that much incentive to improve their pedagogy. Right? If already there are so many students vying for those few limited seats, right? What is the incentive for them to improve their pedagogy? Also, among
I think that also
some of these issues. Yeah.
This lack of competition for pedagogy or for improvement, it reflects in international rankings.
Yeah.
How many students do we see having really high rankings in any of those? Or how many of our institutes also are ranked high in any of those world rankings? So this lack of incentive amongst these people to compete for pedagogy is telling.
Also, if you look at higher education institutions which are among these top ranks, right? Look at the amount of output that comes out of it, the number of publications, the number of patents, and bunch of things, right? The quality of patents, right? Publications in some of these top journals. Yeah.
And research itself as a part of university is appalling in India.
Exactly. So all these things reflects, right? So lack of incentive to improve your pedagogy leads to a bunch of these things. Also, another way to think about public spending in higher education is whatever money is being spent on certain institutions implies that for some other institutions, you will not be able to spend that money. So some of the higher education institutions where you have these professional courses, technical courses, right here, people's capability or people's ability to get a job will be higher. Their initial earnings will be higher. But if you look at the fee structure, the fee structures are not necessarily aligned with their initial earnings. Right? Let's say from IITs, the kind of salary that you'll get, the fees that you pay will be fees will be very low as compared to the initial earnings of students who graduate out of IITs. Now, again, the question is, yes, there are people who will be poor from the poorer backgrounds, who might not be able to afford education. So IITs are definitely ensuring that, right? Someone from an extremely humble socioeconomic background can also get into IITs because the fees is low and then they will have higher initial earnings. But another way to think of it is, there are some other higher education institutions, again, run by the government, where, again, the initial earnings might not be that high. So if the fees for these institutions is subsidized, or it is subsidized more as compared to the fees for those institutions where you have higher earnings, maybe the outcomes can be slightly different. So we have to look at the opportunity cost here. Also, when you are subsidizing things, the same money could have been used for many other things, right? Maybe for improving infrastructure, maybe for improving research development in these institutions. That also needs to be thought about. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one other part of this entire fee structure thing is the price caps that, you know, the government forces on colleges. I think that is also a severe limiting factor for any good educational outcomes. the objective or the motive for those price caps may have been to give, you know, to provide equity of access also, but that's not how it has played out. Because while the price cap may bring, keep the fees down, educational, the tuition fee as such, what colleges have done is they have increased the capitation or whatever donation. That component has gone up. And this becomes a severe stumbling block for students who are looking for student loans or, you know, any other kind of assistance. Because your assistance is given only on the tuition fee value. Now, if I can get a loan on the tuition fee value, but I cannot cover the whole fee because of the capitation fee, I'm not even going to go to that, right? I'm not even going to attempt this. So this has, I mean, I think we need to relook at this, the price caps also on this one.
So this is basically an unintended impact of different kind of price controls that you have, right? So we are assuming that limiting the prices will ensure that more people will be able to access education, but it is playing out in a completely different way.
Yeah, perversely, actually.
Now, so this is what I also wanted to come to, because we now have an idea about, or we now we're discussing about the state as well as the market's role in education. So yeah, this is the first thing, right? How, where we stand right now. We have been trying to make it more equitable, but some of these things might have led us in the opposite direction. Another thing that I find very unfortunate here is, now when it comes to education, ideally, education should build capacities of people. It should work as a mechanism for human development. But the degree that we get at this point, because the learning levels, learning outcomes are not good, the signaling effect of education has actually gone down. Signaling effect of many of these university degrees have actually gone down. So even if you are graduating from some of the top universities, or some of the top colleges, doesn't mean much, right? Maybe you have not gained enough. And what is the consequence of that? So you have to, again, take help of different informal institutions, get the right kind of skills, which is required for job. Or if you are entering into the labor market, again, that particular organization, that particular firm has to train you. So there will be like 9 months of training, 6 months of training, so that you are considered fit to be able to do the tasks which are, you should have been able to do with the help of your education. So all these things are actually leading to massive amount of deadweight losses in the society. And yeah, there is massive transaction cost as well.
Yeah. So solutions to this seem to be, this is just, we're just talking very small. We just touched like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to even the higher education sector. To kind of sum up, the challenges in higher education is, one is that of quality. Two is, how do you build in research into the system itself? Three is equity of access, which is very, very important in a country like ours, which have huge income disparities. And also, one important thing that we have forgotten through this is building liberal arts universities. You know, because we are, our focus has been on professional education or on, engineering or medicine or those kind of fields, we have lost focus on liberal arts universities. But if you look at the data that we have, most education or most higher education is in the fields of arts, commerce, science, the way they put it together, which roughly is some ways liberal arts, but not in the classic definition of it. So if you have these, but you don't have a strong liberal arts university kind of background, I think the societal benefit that comes out of it is mostly lagging. And also it is skewing the market towards some branches of the other. So I think even building excellent liberal arts universities is an important thing that higher education should look at. Yeah. So for me, those are the challenges. And mostly, like you said, signaling what I get out of my degree should signal to the labor market as to what I am capable of. That is not happening at this point in time. And getting that up will be the single driving factor for the next policy. Would you like to
Yeah, So I just have a couple of points here. The first thing is, there has to be more competition, right, in the higher education sector. Competition not between students, but competition between higher education institutions, which implies that we need to have more higher education institutions having more seats. Why do I say this? If, let's say, the number of seats are less and the supply of students is more, there is no incentive for the education institutions to actually improve things. right?
Yeah, and also
when the supply,
when you're saying we should increase supply, we should not constrain ourselves by saying there should be Indian universities only, they should be in partnership with Indian universities. So we should be open to everybody playing their part in the higher education.
Exactly. So that's what, right? This is one of the interesting recommendations that is part of the National Education Policy, which says that we have to maybe revisit our regulations so that foreign universities can set up their bases here. At this point of time, by the way, in India, foreign universities are not allowed, and also education sector is considered to be a not-for-profit sector, which again leads to a bunch of other issues, right? You're not supposed to, or again, getting more funds for higher education, for improving higher education becomes difficult because it is supposed to be a not-for-profit sector. So the first thing that I would say is maybe increase the supply of seats. Then only there can be competition between institutions. Then only there can be competition which can lead to improvement in pedagogy and a bunch of other things, right? And this is what is actually happening in the engineering space now, right? In the engineering sector, all of a sudden the number of seats increased massively, and after that, again, between the different players, there has been increased in competition gradually, and some of the institutions which were not providing top-notch education, they have left the market. And in future, it will take care of that. The demand and supply will take care of it. The second thing is, yes, access to, I mean, since there might be people who are from poorer socioeconomic backgrounds, they might find it difficult to access education. There has to be some reforms in that area. Fee reforms are important. Access to loans is also important. At this point of time, student loan coverage in India is quite low as compared to some other countries world over. Third thing is, how do you ensure accountability, right? One is, yes, you can leave it to the markets. And we have been using inspection methods, accreditation methods. Inspection might not be good enough because you do not have capacity. Accreditation might be better. So what can be done is maybe there can be some mandates that, okay, these are some of the things that universities have to be proactive in disclosing, student profile and other things that we're talking about. This can lead to decrease in information asymmetry. And maybe we can have multiple accreditation agencies, right? And there is competition between them. Yeah, so that can be another way. And since you're talking about research and development, now in case of India, there is something which is very peculiar when it comes to state funding of research and development. Typically, states fund or governments fund research and development because there is again massive positive externalities. But how do they fund it also makes a difference. In most other countries, they will be funding different higher education institutions. So in the higher education institutions, R&D is also happening, higher education is also happening, and both will benefit. Right, you have people who are doing their masters, doing their PhD, they are contributing to research, and research and development is also contributing to their learning outcomes, their achievements. But in India, what has happened is most of this allocation goes to autonomous institutions, CSIR and all. So as a result of which, our academia and our public R&D, they are kind of divorced. So maybe we have to rethink of this as well, because what is happening here is universities do not have fund for R&D, and these institutions might not have enough manpower or human resource to carry out R&D. So maybe we have to rethink some of these policies.
Yeah. So at this point, we've just scratched the surface and we've just brought some aspects of the higher education puzzle to our listeners. We hope we'll be able to cover a few more later. But yeah, so we need to look at this whole sector through the prism of markets, society, government, and look at how we can overcome particular failures is going to play a really important role for all of us.
Thank you, Suman. Thank you, listeners, for joining us.
Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com. or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.